Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're the owner, and you eat what you kill.
We are back. It's 13F. Thank you for joining me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and you're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners with the maximum opportunity to be successful. And we continue to prove that every day with the wonderful guests that we have on the show, the people who come back over and over again, some of them, like our guest this hour, Joan Pride, with the Kiplinger Letters, to help you understand what's going on in the world. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning to you. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
And we got a great letter to talk about, but before we do, I want to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
Do you know what happened on this day?
On this day?
You don't know what today is?
In what year?
All right. I'm going to give you a hint. A really important person's name in this event was named William.
William the Conqueror?
Yeah.
Ooh, I got that right?
Yeah, you did. Good for you. I'm impressed. So come on.
Is this the whole thing with 1066?
Hey, good for you. Now, there's one more little tidbit that you need to give me.
This is the hat trick. Did he take over England or something?
Yes, but there was a battle, and it was called the Battle of...
William the Conqueror.
No. No. Come on, you got it. You got two out of three.
Okay, it's not Battle of the Bulge.
No, that's World War II.
Not Dunkirk. See, I'm rooted in World War II, even though I'm too young to remember it.
Yeah.
Orange?
Bum, bum, bum.
Battle of Orange?
Bum, bum, bum.
I don't know.
The Battle of Hastings.
Hastings.
Yeah, 1066.
You're lucky I knew anything.
No, I'm impressed. I'm impressed
really?
That you knew that. Yeah. Also on this day in 1774... The first declaration of colonial rights in America, 1774.
Gee, you're giving me goosebumps, Jim.
I know it, exactly. Anyway, I thought you'd want to know about that.
I'm thrilled.
888-822-8255 if you'd like to join us and ask a question, make a comment, join in our conversation. We'd love to have you. 888-822-8255. Great letter this week, especially the cover page has a lot about employment.
Yep.
And some of the new stuff that's coming out. And that we have to pay attention to, the high tech has invaded the workplace and it's affecting how we hire, fire, and manage our employees, isn't it?
Well, this is interesting because every few months we try to do a whole page on employment law. And we did this kind of a page about a year ago. And since then, so many new things have happened. It was really hard to choose what to put on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But what we led with, what we thought was the most important thing, has to do with electronic technology and how that's affecting employment law. How about I give you a couple of examples?
Go ahead.
Okay, one good example. You know that there was a lot of flap over the last couple of years about sexual harassment.
Yep.
And also discrimination in the workplace. Well, if you add on top of those concerns email and the internet, you have a whole new layer of problems. For example, a person could be sexually harassed via email just as easily as they could in any other manner.
Mm-hmm.
And another problem...
I mean, if you think about it, here you are at your workstation, and you've got your monitor in front of you, and you check your email all the time because that's part of your job is
right.
to get email from associates and
or from your boss.
From your boss or whatever. And so up pops this little sexually explicit or whatever, some harassing comment from someone else.
That's right.
And that's tantamount to that person walking up in your face and saying it to you.
That's one form of harassment. Now, another form that the courts have defined is called a hostile work environment. In other words, if you sit there and your coworkers are telling lewd jokes all the time or things like that.
Yeah.
Well, if you have these people sitting there looking at pornographic websites all the time, that's considered the same thing.
It's no different from having a pinup on the wall or something like that.
And a person out there might be asking, well, I'm just the guy running the company. Why does this affect me? Well, some courts have said that if you let this go on, you are liable.
That's right. And we talked about that. Our good friend Bill Hubbard, who's our human resources expert, and I over the last six or so months ago, we did a whole show on this very thing and the fact that even you may not even know what's going on. You may not even be in the building.
where this is going on.
But there are courts that will say you should have known.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And you may say, well, how can I control what these other people do? I mean, every minute, I can't be there every minute. The way you control that is through policies that you establish.
That's right.
Or at least the way you protect yourself, I should say.
Not only have a clear policy as to what people can and cannot do, but also have a clear policy set up for someone who may have a grievance so that they know exactly where they need to go to file that grievance and get something solved.
Right. And also, you have to make sure that your managers have received your policies, and you probably need to have them, you should have them sign off that they have read and understand
yes.
them, and probably a little bit of training.
I was going to say, they need to be trained so that they know how to handle these situations.
Yep. And the bigger you are, especially, of course, you don't have to be big, but the bigger you are, the more likely you are, for something like this to happen. Because the reason I say that is because the bigger you are, the more likely you are to have managers working over other people.
Right, and the bigger you are, the harder it is to really be a hands-on owner.
Yeah, you could open up a brand new store in the next town over and hire a manager for that store, and you could be going over 2-3 times a week. And that's all that's necessary to manage that business. But that other person, that manager could be, or an employee over there could be abusing one of your other employees.
Yeah. Here's a question. Are you allowed to monitor the email of your workers?
That's a good question. That's being decided right now.
Well, it's at this point, employment law attorneys are saying they think you do, that the email system is your property.
If, let's put that word in front of it, if the email system is your property.
You've been reading the KSS, haven't you?
Yeah. You're putting your special services. That's
now, right. I'm...
But wait a minute, I knew that already.
The one thing is, though, you're right, this is still being worked out in the court, so you do have to be careful.
You have to meet certain... If you're going to monitor your employee's email, it has to be your company's email system and your servers and all that. Not necessarily the main server that you plug into, but it has to be an internal company system.
Right, as opposed to maybe they have their own separate account via AOL or something else. But that's not, you can't monitor that.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Same thing, it's falling back on other things like monitoring telephone calls, monitoring mail and that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. All right, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters, 888-822-8255. We are back, 24 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters. And Joan, the Kiplinger Letters includes your weekly letter, the Washington letter, which has been around for about 76 years now.
Right.
It comes out every week, and the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and you got this little magazine over there too, don't you?
Just a little throwaway thing.
Yeah.
Called the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
Big,
only one of the top two in the country, that's all.
Yeah, only one of the top. It's a good magazine, folks,
yep.
and it's a big deal. Folks have been reading that for a long time, and I recommend you check that out, and you can do that by going to your website. Talk
that's
to
right.
That.
It's www.kiplinger.com.
KIPLINGER.com. And don't forget to check out the special services section that I wouldn't want to do without, and I don't think you want to either. Check that out. It's on the main page. Go to the special services, click on that. And if you haven't already signed up, check that out. You should have the free 30-day free trial.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Couldn't get rid of that.
Yeah, good. That's good. All right, let's move on. We're talking about employees in the high-tech world. How to hire them, how to fire them, how to manage them, and all the different things. We just got through talking about electronic monitoring and the fact that you've got to be careful about that. And you really need to, before you monitor an email, an employee's email, you really need to know whether you're within the guidelines, don't you?
Oh, no question about it. But there aren't definite guidelines yet until the courts really rule. So
right.
You kind of have to tread carefully in this area.
Well, and people don't, if somebody wants to call us, his wife or she wants to call her husband or whatever and say, hey, I'll meet you at 5 and we'll have dinner, You know, you don't mind that if they pick up the phone and do that. You don't mind if they pick up the, if they type in an email to their wife and say, you know, I'll meet you at 5 or whatever. But the problem is I think the problem is the jokes.
Oh, yeah. He's forwarding the jokes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. You can be inundated. It's just incredible,
right.
The jokes. And I have to, I just had to stop them.
Right.
Because I couldn't even work. I was getting so many jokes.
Oh, I know.
I love jokes, but I didn't care.
But that means, wait a minute.
What?
That means you have friends.
Of course I have friends. I have lots of friends.
Really?
Yeah.
How
you don't have to act so surprised.
Oh, okay.
Tacky, tacky.
No, I'm not surprised.
Okay, let's move on down and talk about hiring. Oh, what?
I was hoping we could talk about unions briefly.
Okay. Well, we're not through. We're not through. I got lots of stuff here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're going to get to unions.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about hiring online.
Okay. Hiring online is just below unions, but we will go back.
Oh, it is? Okay. Well, I got to turn around. All right. Whatever.
Well, hiring online is, you have to be careful with that because the EEOC wants to make sure that employers don't discriminate in the hiring process. So you have to keep records when you're hiring online, you have to keep just as good records as you do when you're hiring on using paper.
Now, what does hiring online look like?
There's a lot of different things. If people can send you a resume online. You can post a job description online. And there are these things called virtual job fairs, which I think you and I have talked about,
mm-hmm.
which I have not seen these, but they have been described to me, where both the applicant and the employer use the website to interact, and people can find jobs that way.
What's the big job search site, Monster.com? Was that it? Something like that?
That's certainly one of them.
There's
I know
one or two big job search where you can go out. I've never seen one of them, but I guess you post your resume on the site or something like that.
Yeah.
But the problem you've got is you've got to be careful that the way you use that capability doesn't lead to discrimination.
And one thing, this was a court case where someone hauled an employer into court saying that the resume scanning software they used, the software they used to scan resumes, you know, using keywords to find the people they wanted, was using, the search terms they were using favored whites over minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And the court agreed with this person and ruled against the employer.
Literally, the words they typed in the search was against the law.
Now, when I haven't read the court case, but I would kind of like to, because I'd kind of like to know what these words were.
Yeah, yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can follow up with that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get we just got a few seconds before we go to a break. Let's go into the union section.
Be careful about blocking unions from organizing online. And the problem is, if a union organizer tries to send emails to your employees, you know, from the outside, that may or may not be okay because the courts have not ruled on this yet.
And it depends on how you handle blocking other things, doesn't
it? Right. If you block everything, then you can block that too.
I got a couple more things I want to talk about on the unions when we come back.
Good.
And then we're going to move on and talk about how to deal with contingency workers who are clamoring, that's right, clamoring for benefits.
They are.
I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our good friend Joan Pride with the Kiplinger Letters is our guest. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 33 after. Welcome back to the show, heroes. I'm glad you're here. 888-822-8255 is our phone number, and my website, including my brand spanking new one that I'm very excited about, is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Just remember the name of the show. Put the normal stuff on the front and the back. And Joan, you've seen my website, haven't you?
It's a good-looking website. I like the improvements.
Thank you. And Joan will be represented in the archives very, very shortly.
Very prominently, I would hope.
Well, no question about it. Absolutely.
I'll have a big picture on there, and you just click on it.
And I don't know about the picture.
Why not?
I don't have a picture.
I'll go back to my contract and check it.
I don't have a picture of you. Send me a picture. We'll put it in there.
Okay.
All right. Unions. Let's talk about unions a little bit more. We're talking about how the high-tech world has impacted the way we hire, fire, and manage our employees. And it really has complicated things, hasn't it?
Absolutely. No question about it. And one of the problems is that the National Labor Relations Board really needs to make a decision as to what's permitted and what isn't. They haven't done that.
Right.
So once again, employers are having to work in a vacuum.
And if you want to prevent unions from sending organizing email or prospecting inquiries or whatever to your employees, anybody that's in your organization, you can't just single out those emails to not be received, can you?
Well, and also, if there's a broader question of solicitation and leafleting,
mm-hmm.
you can't just ban a union and allow other forms of solicitation and leafleting to go on. If you ban, this was a case at the NLRB, forgetting the electronic stuff for a moment, if you ban all forms of solicitation and leafleting from your work site,
yep.
you are fully permitted to ban unions as well. So basically, the employment law attorneys are saying, if you want to be conservative about this, if you're already banning everything else, there's no reason you can't ban online organizing.
Now, here's something that's a little bit off the electronic, the high-tech issue, but it's in KSS, I thought was very interesting. The unions are targeting, they're looking at what they call permatemps, or the independent contractors is another term that they also use. I thought this was very interesting. You know, union membership, 40 years ago, 4 out of 10 workers in America was a member of a union. We're members of unions. Not today, it's 1 in 10.
1 in 10, right.
That's right. And so their ranks have gone down significantly, so they're looking for new opportunities. But here's the interesting thing to me. They're talking about, apparently, according to KSS, they're talking about trying to organize independent contractors.
And that is actually...
How do you do that?
That is actually one of the biggest cases that's now before the NLRB. It's been sitting there because they can't make a decision on to what extent can you organize temporary workers, contingent workers. That is going to be a huge ruling when it finally comes down.
That is going to be very pervasive.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, when I imagine trying to unionize independent contractors, that's almost like trying to herd cats.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move over and talk about, speaking of independent contractors and part-timers, so to speak, KSS had, and the paper, your letter mentioned something about contingency workers clamoring, as you say, for benefits.
Well, what's happening now is you have this, what they call the permit temp world, where you have temps working side by side with full-time, long-term employees, and they're not getting benefits because they are considered contingent workers.
Mm-hmm.
And we go back to the old problem. I know you've talked about it on your show, worker classification.
Yep.
That's always been a problem with the IRS. The IRS looking at you whether you're classifying a worker as an employee or an independent contractor. But now some court cases are popping up that have nothing to do with the tax issues that are dealing with benefit issues. And the biggest one in this area was, I'm sure you've heard of it, the Microsoft case.
Yes.
Where these temps said, hey, we're doing everything that these, you know, regular employees are doing, but we're not getting the benefits, and we want them. Mainly they wanted the stock options.
Well, there are two classes, in my opinion. These are Jim's classes. These are not the NLRB's classes. But there are two classes, I think, that make it very interesting. One is the person who walks into the company and says, look, I want to be a part-time person. I've got this service, this capability that I can provide you. I want to be a part-time person. That's all I want. Put me to work. Now, to me, that person may or may not be justified in getting benefits. I think that depends on the relationship. But then there are these other people, Joan, who the day before yesterday was a full-time employee. Then they got downsized.
Yes.
Then they got hired back as independent contractors.
The quote-unquote consultant.
That's
yeah.
exactly right.
Yeah.
And by the way, folks, and Joan, very coincidentally, Marguerite Kirk is going to be our next guest to talk to us about in the next hour, she's going to be talking to us about the independent contractor issues.
Good.
We're going to do a whole hour on that, which we've done a while back, but we're going to cover that again, some of the new stuff. So this is very interesting to me because I have been an independent contractor. There have been times when I've been an independent contractor with my clients. And so this is, when I was Sears in 2 or 3 lifetimes ago, you know, when you were still in elementary school, Joan, or maybe not even that.
Oh, no, I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had a whole level of employees who were part-timers. That was their role in life, was to be a part-time employee with Sears. That's what they wanted. It's what Sears wanted. And they had the same identical benefits we did.
Wow.
It just, the only difference between them and full-time was that they just didn't work as many hours.
Yeah, yeah.
That was and Sears was very successful working that way.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, Joan. When we come back, we've got a little bit more to talk about on the high-tech world invading our workplace and how it's affecting the way we hire, fire, and manage our employees, then we got some more stuff to talk about. Coming right back after these messages, it's 39 after. I'm Jim Blessing, Small Business Advocate. All right, we're back. It's 44 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blessing, and I'm a Small Business Advocate. And my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And that address has been around a long time, but the website that you're going to see, I believe, is new. And the reason I say I believe that, it just depends on whether your designated name server, your DNS, has picked up the new site, which when it does, if it hasn't today, it probably will any minute now. I'm looking forward to you checking that out. Joan Pride is our special guest. Joan, tell us how we can subscribe to the Kiplinger Letters.
Well, there's a couple different ways. The main way is to call our toll-free number, which is 1-800-544-0155. And for the Kiplinger Washington letter, we also have a website, a special website called Kiplinger Special Services, which gives you extra information on the items in the letter. And in order to get to that, you would go to our website, www.kiplinger.com, and go find the icon that says Special Service and click on and get yourself a 30-day free trial.
Absolutely. Yes, you won't regret that, folks. Okay. Now, we got a little bit more to talk about because this is a major section that you guys had some major information about the electronic influence on the way we hire, fire, and manage our employees. And we've still got a couple more things to talk about. One of the things that you guys talk about is the rise of retaliation lawsuits.
And when we say retaliation, we mean, for example, let's say I'm an employee and I file a discrimination claim. Someone in the office has harassed me or discriminated against me. And the next thing I know, I'm fired. Well, I'm going to say that the employer retaliated against me for my claim. Now, the problem comes in where you might have an employee who's a terrible employee, and you've been thinking about firing them or taking action against them, and you've just never gotten around to doing it, and then they file a discrimination claim. What do you do?
Yep. They basically preempted you, haven't they?
Well, you're stuck unless you have been documenting their poor performance all along. Then you're okay. The problem, though, is still, even with that documentation, the timing's going to look terrible. So I think it sort of behooves you to stay on top of these.
And KSS mentions three things that you can do to protect yourself. First one is that the worker must prove that whatever he or she did is conduct protected by the employment laws. And second, the worker must show that an employer demoted or terminated the worker.
Right.
And third, the worker must prove a cause and effect connection between the first two.
Yeah, that's not always easy, but courts look askance at the timing issue.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I think timing would be against the employer.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move on and talk about something else. this is funny. The reason I say it's funny is because we've been sort of jerked around with this mileage issue. Talk to us about the mileage.
Okay. The amount allowed for mileage by the IRS, the tax deduction, will rise to 32.5 cents a mile next year. Now, the strange thing here is that last year it actually dropped, and I don't think it had ever dropped before. It had dropped down to 31 cents.
Because gasoline had gone down.
That's exactly right. And in fact, usually this kicks in at the first of the year. And last year, everyone was so thrown by the reduction that IRS had to allow a delay until April 1st just so that businesses could get their ducks in a row and be ready for that. So now they've spent 8 months at 31 cents. Now they're going to go back up to 32.5.
Oh, boy.
I know. It's never easy.
I know.
But the only good news is that the rates for charity driving, which is 14 cents, and for medical travel, which is 10 cents, won't change.
Okay, I'm glad we know that.
Not a whole lot of comfort. But
let's talk about the digital assistants, personal digital assistants.
That's right. Now, what we're talking
about... Things like Palm Pilots, right?
Yeah, we call them handheld computers, but yeah, I would call them Palm Pilots, too. They do everything. They store a lot of stuff like notes and phone numbers, appointments, and all that kind of thing. Now, some are beginning to get the technology where they can do word processing, and I can't believe this, spreadsheet features,
How about that? I don't even like to look at a spreadsheet on anything smaller than a 17-inch monitor.
Yeah.
Let alone on something like a little Palm Pilot. But, you know, the interesting thing, and you guys have some interesting statistics on that, but on how many are being sold and how many will be, and I want you to give us that in a second. But the thing that I want to say is,
folks, if you hear people talk about technological convergence and you're not positive what that means, I mean, maybe you have an idea what that means, but you're saying to yourself, okay, where is that? Where could I go to see that? If you would like to almost literally watch technological convergence in action, watch these devices.
Yeah.
And watch them and cell phones, because they're getting closer and closer together.
No question about it.
Cell phones, pagers, and these personal electronic devices.
Yep.
Or digital devices, I guess. I've seen some of these new cell phones that have this big, this larger screen. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, those things are.
I thought they were getting smaller. Now they're getting bigger again.
Well, yeah, but they're getting bigger because it's the convergence of technology.
They're doing so more. Yeah.
Okay.
More.
Now, before we go any further, I want to hear from Kiplinger's professional boxing expert, Joan Pride. Tell us about the boxing news. You're the boxing expert.
Just one word. Women.
Yeah. Women in boxing.
Yeah.
What will they think of next?
I know. I can't believe it.
Why would women want to box?
I don't know why anybody would want to box, but especially women.
It's happening. Hey, listen, did you see where a woman beat a man? This professional woman boxer beat a jockey.
I heard that.
The other day. Were you rooting for the lady?
Well, the poor jockey was probably pretty small.
Is a female boxer a lady?
I'm not touching that
one. I'm not either. That's all of it. Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride, with the Kiplinger Letters, is our special guest. We are back. It's 54 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Check my website out, folks. It's new. A new site. The address is the same, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And let me know what you think. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter. Joan Pride is our guest. She's the senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters and our good friend, member of our Brain Trust. Couldn't do without her. She joins us every week to talk to us about the most recent Kiplinger Letter. And Joan, I've enjoyed this hour, and thank you for that.
Me too, Jim. Thank you.
Let's move over and talk about artificial blood.
You know,
artificial blood.
Oh, stop it. Well, apparently artificial blood is going to win approval from the FDA in the next few years. I think it's a little bit of a misnomer, though. I think it makes it sound like this is something that was cooked up in the laboratory that's fake. But they actually use, for example, one version of this uses purified cow's blood, taking the hemoglobin from that and building on that so it can carry oxygen.
Two big benefits from this, apparently, is that obviously this will help to make up the shortfall of donated blood.
That's important.
That's a big deal. The other thing is apparently, and I guess this is intuitive, I guess, but it will eliminate the spread of disease through donated blood.
That's right, because if it's not coming from someone else, then you're not going to get someone else's disease.
But I've got to ask this, Joan.
Oh, gee,
if
what?
Part of it's coming from cow's blood. How do we know we're not going to get mad cow?
Well, that's a very good question.
Huh? Have you thought about that?
I think that is. No, I hadn't. Boy.
Okay, let's move down and talk about painless tests for diabetics.
Hey, this is good.
Big deal.
When a diabetic needs to have their blood tested, which I guess is quite often, they have to have their finger pricked, which is not a big deal, but it is painful. But now, this is a patch that's going to go on your forearm and sit on your forearm and analyze your blood sugar without having that prick.
Yeah.
That's
but you know something you said just now in your statement, you said that you talked about how much this is happening, how many people are using this. KSS, I learned in the Kiplinger Special Services section that in 97 that was a $3 billion industry.
What, diabetes?
The diabetic testing.
Oh yeah.
Was a $3 billion industry, yeah. And in a couple of years it's going to grow to like 5 billion.
Well, next year 5 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something. I mean, think about that. That you said a lot of people. That's a lot of folks.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
So, but we won't see this till 2001.
Right. Okay. Quickly, let's move down to the bottom of that page and talk about network home computer networks.
Right. Well, what we're saying is that business is booming for firms serving home computer networks.
Yeah.
We're talking about devices that link printers, scanners, computers, and give multiple access to the internet. These are going to cost as little as $100.
Yeah.
And they're going to get easy to install.
And some of them are even fixed up where you can just plug into a phone line in your house, and it works through the phone system. And the beauty of this thing is, and she said home network, and that's true, but also small businesses.
That's right.
It works the same. And the other things that are coming out are the ability for more than one unit, and these are already out actually, more than one unit to use, more than one computer, I should say, to use the same modem to connect to the Internet.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's going to be important.
One more quick thing before we go. Product liability reform, you say, is not going to go.
It's not going to get passed this year. Consumer groups and trial lawyers are going to kill this.
Unbelievably, I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. The former makers of lead-based paint are being sued by Rhode Island for child health care.
Even though they haven't made it for years.
And when they made it, it was the only way you could make paint.
Right.
Unbelievable. We need some protection for...
Well, you won't get it this year.
Yeah. Okay, got to go for this hour, Joan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week. Good job. Got to wrap it up, folks. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, never be afraid to try something new. Amateurs built the ark. Professionals built the Titanic. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.